Varicosity Vein Center, providing vein treatment relief for vein disease, spider veins, and varicose veins for over 20 years. Their team of doctors and vein specialists deliver techniques and care for residents in Jackson, Madison, Ridgeland, and Central Mississippi. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit provides information on how you can lead a healthy lifestyle. I'm the host, Josie Bidwell. Search for and subscribe to Southern Remedy on any podcasting app to not miss any episode.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulture's Felder Rushing, and we are live at the Mississippi Craftsman's Guild. Incredible. Their I guess you call it their headquarters, a display. And it's the annual Chimneyville Arts and Crafts Festival. I wish y'all try to get out here sometime this weekend. It's all day on Friday, Saturday, and part of the day Sunday. It's on Rice Road in Ridgeland between the Natchez Trace and the reservoir. But we're going to be talking live about gardening today. So anything that's on your mind, this beautiful, muggy, sunny, just an incredible day. We've still got some fall colors out there. I've already started seeing some early flowers, including my first dandelion of the year. There's a lot of things that are coming up. Daffodils are coming up. They're not blooming yet, and we have camellias. It's just a great time to be in the South if you're a gardener, because we don't have to do too much except walk around the fire ant mounds. Every time it rains, the fire ant mounds just sort of pop up. And I drove my truck out here to the Craftsman's Guild headquarters, and I drove right over fire ant mound, and I couldn't have gotten stuck in that thing. That's a big fire ant mound.
Well, I'm glad you made it out, man. Glad you made it out.
So we're going to – well, I got them moved on. They have definitely moved on. And a job, I guess, you're going to have to just tell me when there's some callers.
Yeah, we got Abram Nanny on the boards back in the studio, so he's going to let us know when we got calls. But the best thing about us, when we come live, we have a live audience. So if anybody has any questions, Charles is at the ready to bring you the microphone. You don't even have to get up out of your seat.
Yeah. There was some questions beforehand, and I happened to have a little ace in my pocket. Matter of fact, there's a good one that we have a member of the audience who can answer a whole lot better than I am. But before you mention it, and give us a call, folks, we got the lines wide open. I had an interesting thing at my pub the other night. You know, I hang out with a bunch of old guys at a pub, kind of a metro place. We don't care who you vote for, church. And, you know, it's where old guys and old ladies get together and just chat. And I always hear an interesting thing. Well, I was complaining the other day because I go back to the 60s. Matter of fact, Spence Fletcher's here somewhere. I don't know where Spence went, but Spence is the son of my Boy Scout leader back in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he spent time on the biobank. My mother showed him how to spit and fish and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I was cleaning out my cabin the other day, and I found an old lava lamp. Now, you're too young to know what a lava lamp is.
I've seen them in movies.
Any of y'all know what a lava – anybody here, hey, y'all have lava lamp? Well, the bulbs burned out, so I went to the heart. I looked at it, said, only use this kind of bulb or you'll start a fire. Of course, we didn't know about that back in the 60s and 70s. But I went – I got the right kind of bulb. I plugged it in. It looked great. And all night, I watched that thing. It just looked pretty. Nothing bubble. And come to find out, it's an LED light. You can't get a real incandescent lava lamp bulb anymore.
It's a weird world.
It's a weird world. And anyway, my friend at the pub, Bobby, he said this: LEDs are the death of lava lamps. I think it's too bad because it's pretty. Don't get me wrong; it just won't bubble. So anyway, any gardening questions? You might have something you want to yak about your garden. So come on up. You got to get up
No, we bring the microphone to
it. Going to take the microphone to it. Long-legged guy named Charles.
There we go. Okay, so my first guest here is someone near and dear to me. My own mom from Ridgeland, Catherine.
Hey, mom.
Thank you. I'm worried a little bit about my crepe myrtles, and I'm wondering when we should be trimming those back.
Okay, crepe myrtles. How many of y'all have heard the phrase? Well, what is the phrase? Crepe murder. Southern Living, and 26 years ago, came out. Steve Bender and Linda Askey of Southern Living came up with this phrase called crepe murder about pruning crepe myrtles. 26 years ago, they set neighbors against neighbors because crepe myrtles have been pruned for hundreds of years. Every Shinto temple in Japan, they pruned up. The American Horticulture Society does it, Royal Horticulture. But as soon as you prune a crepe myrtle in the South, you're considered a pariah. So I just want to let y'all know, Charles's mom murdering her crepe myrtle. No, anyway, to answer your question, have you ever seen where like a drunk driver runs over trees with their pickup truck and the trees sprout back out? You can do that at any time of the year and they'll sprout back. It doesn't hurt the crepe myrtle to prune it any time. But most people do it in the wintertime where they can see better what they're doing, less likely to run into yellow jackets or something like that. But it's just like a rose. Anytime, you know, wintertime, spring, they bloom on new growth. So if you prune it even in the summertime, it'll put out new growth and flower in the fall. So anytime you get around to it, just understand that your neighbors are going to pull their glasses down and look at you and think crepe myrtle. And by the way, I had somebody at Java, they told me that, well, I just don't like it. You know, I'm thinking, well, you know, if you want to prune your crepe myrtles, it's okay. If you don't want to prune them, it's okay. If you don't want to prune them and you tell somebody else they shouldn't prune them, shut up.
There you go.
It's like coming to my house at a party and going to my bathroom and turning my toilet paper roll around because it ain't the way you do it. So anyway, the main thing is shape it up. I wouldn't just cut it straight across because it comes out, all the new growth comes out kind of like a broom effect. It's not very, just cut it at different levels. Sort of like plucking eyebrows. Don't cut them straight across. Yes, ma'am. Oh, what? We got another question. And Abram, if we get some callers, you're going to have to just break in and let us know. You got some? Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Well, on that question about the crepe myrtle, is there any way you can grow those fingers out? Because mine got cut off in a knuckle. Is there a way to grow it out to where to be halfway decent again?
Best thing to do is cut it off below that knuckle. And then when it puts out all that new growth, thin it out to just two or three good ones and let them become new trunks. You can cut them back to as far as you want. It's just like, there's no problem. Just cut them back, whack them back. By the way, I helped teach the arboriculture class at Mississippi State. That's a tree surgery class. And I can make your eyes bleed with detail about plant physiology. You should do this, should that. But the bottom line, just cut it back. It's just a crepe myrtle tree. It's not any different than pruning a rose or an azalea or anything else. And I know I'm speaking against what Southern Living says, but I'm talking from science, not style. What's up, Java?
We got a few phone calls lined up, so let's talk with John in Ridgeland.
Hey, John, you're not very far from us. How come you're not down here at the craft center?
Oh, well, that's a question I have involving people with limited mobility and limited memories living in nursing or assisted living homes. But first, let me ask you a seasonal question. How do you get the most out of the form we call a Christmas cactus?
How do you get the most out of a Christmas cactus? First of all, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, those are names that we apply to them, to cacti that grow in trees in the tropics. And they just happen to bloom in the spring or the fall or the winter. So we associate holidays with them. And there's a lot of different kinds. Where they grow naturally is in trees and semi-desert, semi-tropical places. And what makes them grow the best is when they get plenty of sunshine without burning them up, a little water when they get dry. And then in the fall, if you'll let them dry out, they think that it's drying out where they are naturally, and that triggers that, and shorter days triggers them into setting flower buds. So if you let them stay on the dry side, and then make sure they're not under a real bright light all the night, they'll set flower buds. If you leave it outside, usually they get the shorter days starting in September anyway. So as long as not near a porch light, shorter days or longer nights, and keeping them on the dry side, they'll start setting flower buds. That's what they do in nature, whether we notice it or not.
Wonderful. Now, the second general question. Many older people, and I mean truly older, still love plants, but may have limited mobility or limited memories and maybe living in places where they have to be assisted or maybe even require nursing homes.
Yeah, or just tired like me.
Yeah, so what's worn out by looking for lava lamps. That was exhaustion.
So what's the question about it?
Well, what plants would you recommend?
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, and I say this with great humility, keeping in mind that I've written books and books and books on gardening, on horticultures and all that kind of stuff. I have artificial plants from Hobby Lobby in my apartment. I'm not making this up, and they look real. I'm not talking about cheap old plastic things like we were kids, but artificial plants, because that is a connection that our mind, when we see these plants, it makes it almost the same connection as if they were living plants. But to answer your question, I like this plant that's called, some people call it mother-in-law tongue or snake plant. Y'all know this plant? Sansevieria.
Sansevieria.
It will grow in an ashtray on top of the television. It likes low light.
Wonderful.
It likes humidity. You ought to water it at least once every 2 or 3 months, and it gives you that little feeling that you know. Now, if you really like tending for stuff, an African violet plant would be great, but they require you to pay a lot of. They're more like a cat than a dog, I guess. So anyway, African violets, if you really like fiddling with plants, but to start off with, there's a lot of really good low light, low humidity plants like the Sansevieria. There's a plant called Chinese evergreen. A fellow this morning brought in a plant that's called dumb cane or Diefenbachia. They really like low light, low humidity, and they don't need a bunch of babying if you don't feel like it or don't have time. That help?
Well, my friend, thank you so much.
You bet.
We should be able to continue gardening as long as we last. And thank you for the advice.
You bet. You bet. Thank you, Yukal. I appreciate that. Anyway, those of y'all who are here, I don't know if you noticed, I got my old pickup truck here. I've got a gumdrop Christmas tree made from a thorny plant in my yard. How many of y'all had those when you were a kid? Gumdrop thing. We still have the one that we made for my mother when I was a teenager. They are rock hard. I tried eating them. I also have my grandmother's concrete chicken, Granny's concrete chicken, and she's sitting in a little flower pot that's made out of a inside-out a wheelbarrow tire. Just want to let you know, it's possible to garden, even in the back of a pickup truck. Got a lot of questions here, but, Jarvis, should we go to the phones first or what?
Yeah, we have some phone calls. We have Bridget and Brandon who wants to – well, no, first let's go to Wilson in Mount Hermon, Louisiana.
All righty. Good morning. Good morning. What's up?
Good morning. I've recently purchased a tangerine tree. It's been like a roughly about a 3-gallon pot, and I'm trying to find out when the best time to plant that thing out in my yard would be.
Anytime you can dig a good hole, you can plant a plant that's growing in a pot can be planted any time. But if you plant it now, it's not going to be watered as much as if you plant it in the summertime. So I go ahead and start on the hole, make it nice and wide. If you don't feel a little bit stupid about it, it's not wide enough because that root tree wants to grow roots straight out. So dig a nice wide hole. And then when you plant it, loosen up all that potting soil. That's 3 gallons worth of bark and stuff. And if you just pull it out of the pot, stick it in the ground, it's going to stay wetter or drier than their dirt around it. So dig a nice wide hole, loosen up that potting soil, stir it in the dirt, and plant it whenever you get around to it, whenever you feel like it. Today, if you feel like
it. Okay, so basically, the you know, with it being in a pot now, if I plant it the, you know, right now, you know, like today or this afternoon or whenever, the winter cold's not going to affect it?
Winter's going to get it. If winter's going to get it, it's going to get it no matter what you do. If you live far enough south, you can, you know, put it in a protected place. It can live outside. As a matter of fact, the Louisiana and Mississippi hardiness plant zones, it just shifted a little bit. And in theory, it's going to be a little bit different. So anyway, no, go ahead and plant it. If you're going to leave it, if you're planning on leaving it outside anyway, go ahead and plant it. And either it's going to make it or it ain't.
Okay.
Does that help? It's a gamble.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
It is legal to gamble in the garden, even in Louisiana.
Okay.
Good luck. Now, this is serious.
They want to kill it, you know?
Well, it won't be you. It'll be the weather. If you don't plant it, it's more likely to be a victim of whether you remember to water it or not. So it has better chances in the dirt than being dragged in and out of your house all the time. So go ahead and go for
okay.
it. All right, appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
I, you know, sometimes there's so many different approaches. You know, I could get real technical, but well, you could just plant, you cover it up and put a tent around it, stuff like that. And I'm thinking, go ahead and stick it in the ground. Let's see what happens. You know, on the other hand, anybody who lives north of, let's say, Hattiesburg or Baton Rouge, if you live north of there, citrus is going to be a gamble. I hear it all the time. People say, I got a Satsuma tree in my yard. I'm thinking, I want to see it. Because last year, it was a rough winter. So this could be a gamble. So what we got, Java?
Let's go ahead and talk with Bridget and Brandon.
Bridget, what's going on this morning? Good morning.
Good morning, Felder. How are you doing?
So far, so good. I feel a little bit, I got a sports coat on, got my hair hanging out, my freak flag is flying, and got a bunch of people here wanting to talk about gardening. What can we help you with?
Well, I have a question for you because it's something that I think none of us have seen in our lifetimes, but there are just hundreds and hundreds of brown, dead, tall trees because of the drought in the summer.
Yep.
What is going to happen? Are they going to fall over? They're not going to rebirth.
No, this is a good question. And as I drive around the Mississippi from the coast all the way up to Memphis and around and over to Texas, there's a lot of trees that were damaged by that hard December freeze, early freeze last year, and then that late freeze we had in March. But the heat, combination of heat and drought, really pushed a lot of plants, particularly conifers, over the edge. I see a lot of dead pine trees, a lot of dead magnolia trees. Whatever killed the dinosaurs couldn't kill magnolias, but 2023 did. I lost a magnolia tree in my yard and an 80-year-old Cliara shrub in my garden. I lost a Nandina in my yard. You can't kill those with a flamethrower. But bottom line is, there's only three things you can do. First of all, just ignore it. And if it's not going to hit something, if it falls, just let it fall. And meanwhile, all sorts of wildlife lives in it. They're called snags. And you have incredible amount of diversity living in dead trees. So if you can leave it, just leave it. But as far as others, all you can do is either cut them down or let them fall. That's your choice. Oh, well, there is another one. I lost a magnolia tree in my yard. I posted pictures on Mississippi. Anybody here, y'all members of Mississippi Gardening Facebook, did you see what I posted? My magnolia tree died, and somebody said, well, it'll come out in the spring. I'm thinking, no, it's deader than a 2x4. It is dead. So I spray painted it black, and it looked so nice. It was nice and shiny instead of green or brown. And I left it like that, and it's starting to fall apart. So this past weekend, we cut the branches back and stuck bottles on the ends of the branches and turned it into a bottle tree. And it looks great.
Well, I walked down the apartment complex here, and I made beautiful arrangements with all the dead stuff. But I traveled to Tennessee last week. Now, when you get north of Alabama, it's not as bad. But all the way through Mississippi, and it's not the fall colors, it's dead colors, worries me.
I know it's everywhere. It's universal. It's a terrible thing. But again, luckily for me, I've had cataract surgery. I just take my glasses off, and it just all disappears. And they also take Wellbutrin, which helps me cope with a lot of stuff. But there's nothing we can do. I'm not trying to make light of it, but there's nothing that we can do about it except, if you can't fix it, flee it, or fight it, let's just flow with it and let's see what happens. Nothing else we can do. It's just bad weather. It's just like having white hair grow on my ears. Nothing I can do about it except choose to leave them or pluck them.
Can I request a little shout out to a couple of people?
Keep it clean.
Oh, darn. Okay. So to you and to Java and to Jamie Lee and to Angela and to Lisa and to everybody else at MPB, I love you. I support you
so much. Thank you.
We appreciate your call. Thank you.
And before we go to anything else, let me mention that I walked around the Craftsman's Guild here, the headquarters, and it's right between the Natchez Trace. There's a sign on the Natchez Trace to the Craftsman's Guild. It's real close to the reservoir in Ridgeland on Post Road. It's an incredible kind of an artsy, contemporary looking building. It has got so many arts and craftsmen, and they've got an incredible. Just some of the things I saw last night: birdhouses, gourds, glass collectibles, ceramic flowers, wind chimes, kitchenware, wood carvings, woven and whisker baskets, quilts, sculptures, wall hangings, wood furniture, and a guy named Jim Piggott, who is a guy who made the little copper frog that's in the back of my pickup truck. Y'all see the frog out there? Guy from Craftsman Guild. I ran to him last night. So anyway, come on down. They've got a lot of artists you can talk with, and you can watch them do their work, and you can find some really cool stuff for you or the folks that you want to give interesting collectible stuff to. Anyway, Craftsman's Guild.
What's Felder, up? You didn't mention this.
I did.
Like, this is, describe this, because this is.
No, no, you describe it.
Work of art. Thank you. This is
work of art. But,
that's it.
You know, it's this beautiful. Is, this, it's beautiful. This is radio. Work of art doesn't cut it, Java.
Well, it's a, I mean, I could say it's a green garden hose wrapped up with zip ties and Christmas decorations. Yeah. But that doesn't adequately describe what I'm looking at.
I gotta say, it looks good from here, guys.
it's a holiday wreath that's made with a rolled up green hose and a lot of Christmas balls on it.
And this is something that you would only see at Chimneyville.
Can you see that on my truck though? I'm doing that when I get home.
Now that's sweet.
I'm gonna do one of those for my truck. I've already got things made out of tires.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had a question. We got time for a question for the audience.
Yeah, we'll take one more question and we'll do our cheesy tune break.
Okay. You had a question about this guy back here. A question about his plumeria plant, which I've got one that's leaning over in pot, not doing anything. So that's my plumeria experience.
Yeah, Wayne. I would like to know, when is the best time to do a cutting, and how long should I do it? Like a 6-inch cutting to repot that, and
okay.
And then how long is it going to take for the host plant
to flower? Okay, do y'all know what a plumeria is? Frangipani is what they make the lays out of in the flowers in Hawaii. It's a big, it's a tropical plant. I have to keep it in a pot. Well, I want you to take the phone over to that lady right there. Her name is Evelyn Stewart. While you're doing there, Evelyn is the daughter of the man who was the first ever county extension horticulturist in the state, Howard Stewart, who got me my job when he retired. Anyway, Evelyn Stewart happens to be one of the top, if not the top, plumeria expert in Mississippi. There she is, Evelyn.
Little exaggeration there. Basically, plumerias go dormant for the winter. And so what you want to do is protect them from the cold. And you can do that either by taking them inside in the pots, or you can actually bare root them. You can just rip them out of the pots, turn them on the side, and stick them in a closet. In a dark closet.
Mine dropped all the leaves off of. Is that normal?
They drop their leaves. If they don't drop all their leaves, take the rest of the leaves off. Just leave them there until the danger of temperatures below 42 degrees has passed. Then bring them out. If you want to do any repotting, if you want to do any cutting at that point, that's the right time to do it. And the question of how long the cutting should be is complicated, because it depends on how many plants you want. Every cutting you take will root.
So about how long? Foot long, 2 feet long, 6 inches?
It's best for them to be a little bit into the brown wood at least. 6 inches is too short. And you can take, if you've got a tree that's 6 feet tall, you can cut it off at 3 feet and have 2 3-foot trees. And you can root that 3-foot section all as one plant if you want to have just 2 plants instead of 20 plants.
So how's that?
One more question. How do you keep the roots from rotting? Because these things don't like water.
You don't water them all winter. If you do, you give them maybe a half cup once.
So basically, just strip all the leaves that hadn't fallen off, stick it in the closet, forget about it. Next spring, make some cuttings a foot or two long and take it from there. Don't keep it wet. So I've been taking in and out. No, let it go completely dormant. Stick it in the closet. And this is the top expert said, just stick it in the closet. Forget about it. Horticulture's Felder Rushing, Gestalt Gardener here with Java Chapman and all the other folks at MPB at the Mississippi Craftsman's Guild headquarters on Rice Road in Richmond. We got a nice crowd of folks coming on a beautiful one. Hey, y'all, how's it going?
All right.
One of the things that there's some really quirky stuff in there. I mean, done by real artists. One is called the Thunder Gourd. Have any of y'all seen a Thunder Gourd? Make your way in there. Thunder Gourds, they're gourds, and they got a little membrane on the bottom and a wire hanging out. And when you shake it, it sounds just like thunder. Well, anybody see, I've got this gourd turned into, what do y'all think this gourd is? It's a birdhouse, got a hole cut in it. It's just an old birdhouse gourd. But I got these metal wings on there. So you know what I call it? This is my Gordian angel. Okay, that one didn't work. Let's go by the phone call, Java.
All right, well, let's go to Lauren in Natchez.
Hey, Lauren, good morning.
Good morning. About your poor dead magnolia tree. When you get through with it being a bottle tree and whatever else, if it's big enough, chop it down. And I'm sure there's plenty of woodworkers in the state, including myself, that would love to have a chunk of that trunk to make the beautiful salted wall magnolia bowl. And a comment on the dandelions. I don't understand why no one has hybridized those. You know, they're edible, but they're a little bitter. And the blooms are gorgeous. So why don't we have the nice big blooms and nice sweet greens from the dandelions?
That's right. And they have bees and butterflies on them in the middle of the winter. They may not be ideal, perfect for the native bees and butterflies, but the native bees and butterflies, sometimes that's all they got. It's a great, you know, but you know, if we had a dandelion that had burgundy foliage or variegated foliage, it would sell for $5.
It would. Definitely.
Anyway, well, thanks for the tip. I think the woodworkers have got plenty of magnolia wood to work with this year. Anyway, appreciate it. Thank you. Say hey to the folks down at Fat Mama's Tamales for me.
I sure will. Have a blessed day.
And by the way, Java, this is a little oddball thing, but over the past few years, I tried to lose a little weight because I'm getting on up there, and I found out you don't have to eat the whole dozen tamales.
But that's how they sell them.
I know they sell them by the dozen, but I found out if you don't eat at least half a dozen, you're not happy, and you get wrinkled. So I'm going to go to the farmer's market tomorrow. Before I get on an airplane, I'm going to the farmer's market and get me a dozen tamales. Who wants to sit by me? Anyway, let's go back to the phone calls.
Now, we just left Natchez. Let's go all the way up to Oxford. Cynthia in Oxford.
Hey, Cynthia, what's it going on in Lafayette County?
Oh, well, we had a couple nights of frost. So that was kind of exciting, but I've been doing a lot of prevention, and that's why I called, because I wanted to just kind of encourage people, you know, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as they say. And the old-fashioned Christmas lights, not the LEDs, but the old-fashioned one, if you can find them in your attic or at Goodwill or something, they do emit a certain amount of heat, which I think is the key to the lava lamp thing. Were you going to say something?
No, I'm just listening. I was thinking of turning my closet into a lava lamp and a big old sizzling Christmas tree light grotto.
Yeah, well, they do emit enough heat that I've used them for draping around some of the smaller trees and shrubs. Because then, you know, it does prevent, it helps to prevent freezing, because they're going to be there all night, you know, and you're going to maybe just turn them on the nights that you need them. But the other thing you can do is take old curtains that you might find at Goodwill, the sheer ones, and use those for over your vegetable beds, your raised beds, or some of your pots or whatever, with a little PVC pipe that you can... Right. Give it some support. Have you seen that done? You've probably seen that done, Felter.
I have. I mean, that's all a greenhouse is. It's like putting plants in your pickup truck and rolling the windows up on a cold day.
Yeah, right? But these are affordable. You know, it's an affordable solution for people who are wanting to prevent the kind of freeze damage.
Mm-hmm. And for what it's worth, you know, you could put a grow lamp. Up under a big metal can, and the metal can will actually heat up and radiate heat better than the light bulb. But as far as just covering plants up, that only helps plants down to about 27 or 28 degrees, not down to the teens, and not if it stays like that for a long time. So it's a good temporary protection. I've got some rebar. You could use PVC pipe over one of my little gardens, like a covered wagon hoops. And then if it's going to get cold overnight, I just pull a piece of plastic over it and hold it all the way to the ground, so it captures heat radiating from the ground. But then if it's going to be cold, you know, below the mid-20s, it's going to stay that way for a while. You know, you're going to have to either use grow lights or something heated up, or let's just grow kale and collards and things that like it in the wintertime.
Yeah, things that won't mind the freeze. And the other thing people sometimes do, and I've tried this, is a little bit of fresh manure if you have a neighbor with horses or something, into the area that you're trying to hold the heat, because manure will emit heat. So
little tricks of the trade to help get us a few more days at the end of the summer or the early in the spring. Those are good tips, though. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, just prevention. You know, that's the key. Thank you.
All righty. By the way, y'all may have heard the dogs barking a little while ago. This is live radio, And it reminded me last night, I didn't get the lady's name, but a woman came up with a dog named Panda. And Panda looked mean, but she made it look friendlier by putting a Gestalt Gardner bandana on it.
Oh.
And we got Gestalt bandanas here. I mean, Panda with a Gestalt Gardner bandana, it made him look friendlier.
Did we get a picture?
No, well, she has it, I didn't get her name. Forgot it. So anyway, well, those dolls come back. Let's bandana them up. So what else we got here?
Well, we're still waiting on some calls from the studio, but I didn't know if anybody in the audience had something.
Yes, we do.
I have an orchid.
Oh, boy.
That someone gave me.
I don't know anything about orchids. I don't know nothing about orchids.
Well, it had a little baby start at the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I cut that off and replant it?
Okay. The question is, can she cut off a little orchid at the top of the thing and replant? Anybody know? I don't know. Collectively, we don't know. I'm sure that you can. That's called proliferation, I think. But anyway, you're supposed to be able to. But there's so many different kinds of orchids. I just can't. A long time ago, my brain said, nope, I'm not going to know about orchids because I can't keep it straight. And as soon as I answer a question about an orchid bird says, Felder, you're an idiot. So I'm just going to say, I'm not an idiot. I'm just ignorant. I don't know. But I'll look it up for you. Somebody quick, Google it. Somebody quick.
Well, while they're Googling, let's go to Bill and Iuka, who wants to join us from the phone.
Hi, Bill. What's going up in the icebox? You've got some cold up there this fall.
Oh, it's 54 right now, but it's been in the 20s, the high 20s when I get to work. You helped me name my other two hibiscus, Mary Soul and Don Ho. And I got a new one. I was wondering if you had any recommendations for a name. And I also got a snake plant. And I'm wondering how to take care of that snake plant.
Okay, snake plant being the one with the leaves shaped like a sword.
Yeah, mother-in-law's tongue.
Yeah. Sansevieria, I think, is the last. Anyway, the main thing, they don't like to be in a closet, but they will tolerate low light and they tolerate low humidity. The main thing is give it as much light as you can without being in the sun, and wait till it gets really, really dry before you water it. It's a desert plant. It's a succulent. So just don't keep it wet. Give it some light, and that's about it.
Okay. And then what should I name my new hibiscus? You told me Don Ho.
I don't know. Let's call it Aloha because it's probably not going to live that long.
Oh, now I've had the other two
retired.
You
asked Java. He asked.
He did.
Good luck. And by the way, Java, I have an answer.
And now we have questions to unasked questions.
Answers.
Oh, answers. I said questions.
Yeah.
Oh, so now we have answers to unasked questions from Felder Rushing.
Thank you. You know, this is the time when I try to come up with something that nobody really thinks about, and it's stupid type of stuff. Like, I was noticed when I came out to my truck this morning that y'all see the basil in the back? Is it basil or basil? What do y'all say? Basil. And it looked kind of, it was saying, what's happening? Because it's all brown and it's not looking very happy. And I've got basil, I've got oregano, I've got rosemary, chives, parsley, hot peppers, all growing in the back of the pickup truck, but the basil looks pretty bad, and it's thinking, what's happening? Well, we had cold weather, and the wind was hitting it when I was driving here, and the wind basically desiccated, it dried out the leaves, but what happens when a plant freezes? What happens to the plant that you left outside? You left your aloe out, or your mother-in-law tongue, or you left your whatever, and you go out the next morning, and it's flopping over, it's going over to the rim of the pot, it's dripping down, it's dripping green stuff on the ground. What is that called? Anybody know? Death, yeah, it froze. Well, what happens is the cells inside a plant have got moisture in them, and when that cell turns to ice, it swells up and it punctures, it breaks the cell wall, and when it thaws out, all the goo melts out. It's a terrible thing. And come to find out, there's not a scientific word for that. There's not a word for that whole process. And so when I was in graduate school, my college roommate, Clayton Allen, who's from Indianola, he said, well, you know, let's just make up a word. He said, you could say booglify if you want to. And so that is the word now for the past 35 years. It's been in print. It's been in magazines. So when a plant freezes, it thaws, it drips out, it starts stinking, it smells like old chlorophyll mess on the floor, you could say my plant booglified. There. Nobody ever asked me that, Java.
I love that word, booglified.
Booglified. Yeah, he said, why not?
We can apply it in so many different ways.
So what we got? Back up. Get away from the...
Well, let's go back to the phones. We have David in Grenada who wants to join us.
Hey, David, good morning.
Good morning. I was painting my ceiling, and I had the radio on, and I was listening to you guys. And somebody about 15 minutes ago was talking about magnolia trees, and I cut down one about 15, 16, 18 inches in diameter, and it's just sitting in a pile rotting, and I was wondering if you could connect me to somehow to that person, and I'll give them my logs. I've got more than one.
I tell you what you can do. You can get online, wash your hands first because you got paint on them. Go to MS Arts, ARTS.org. It's the Mississippi Craftsman's Guild, and it lists all the artists on there by what they do. And they've got woodworking groups within the Craftsman's Guild, and they may very well have one in Grenada or close to you. So anyway, the Mississippi Craftsman's Guild has a lot of members who do work, and they're all listed on their page. Or else you just shoot me. All right, appreciate it. Yeah, I turned mine into a bottle tree, Java. Turned my old magnolia tree into a bottle tree. And it's pretty. It's bottle tree number 20. You know, somebody said, my son said, you know, Dad, when you're gone, I'm going to have to, you know, have a roll-off dumpster for all your bottle trees and glass and stuff. But I also have stuff in my garden besides bottle trees. I've got real glass sculptures done, including by Andrew Young, Pearl River Glass Studio, and some of the other glass artists who are here at the Craftsman's Guild, and ceramic flowers in my garden that came from the Craftsman's Guild. Somebody said, well, that's art. Well, no, it's fake plants is what it is. You know, so some people say, yeah, you can't have fake plants. Yeah, you can. It's just artificial. It's like hanging stuff out of holes in your ears. Some people do that. I put bottles in my trees. Same thing. But the Craftsman's Guild folks have got some really clever stuff that looks great. What's up, Java?
We got another phone call. Tim in Seminary.
Tim, good morning, Tim. What's up?
Good morning, fellas. Hey, I just wondering if you would tell your listeners a little bit of expertise, what you know about loquat and pineapple guava in our zones, zone 8 and zone 9.
Okay. So, well, first of all, pineapple guava. I saw one yesterday in Jackson. A bit. I actually had some of the fruits of it, but last year it froze dead as a doorknob this winter. And it's a nice looking plant. Does better closer to the coast. Pineapple guava is a kind of a generic big shrub. It's got the most exotic purple and white flowers I think I've ever seen, and little edible fruits, sort of like a pawpaw, I guess. But as far as the loquat, some people call it Japanese plum, they bloom typically, and they're starting to bloom now in the state. They typically bloom in January or February, which means they typically freeze and lose all the fruit. So they're going to be again. It's a pretty plant. It's a nice big coarse sort of gray green plant. It's a really nice landscape plant, but it's going to be a gamble because they bloom in the middle of the winter, and a late freeze usually gets the flowers or the fruit. Some years you get them though, and it's awfully nice. But they're both subtropical fruits, and they're gambles. It's sort of like people plant cherries here in Mississippi. Cherries are produced in Michigan, not Mississippi. They don't really like it this far south because it's not cold enough in the winter. Pineapple guava, a little bit too cold in the winter. So we have to stick with things like figs and muscadines and blueberries and stuff like that. Things that where pineapple guava grow, these plants don't grow. That sort of fell flat on that one, didn't I? Anyway, they're gambles. Good luck. Enjoy them. And if you ever get some fruit, you're going to really have a good time with them.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Sometimes I feel like I come across a little bit negative, Java.
Well, I mean, one thing I will say about you, Felton, you say it all the time, you're not going to proverbially blow smoke. You know, you're going to tell them straight. If you can't do it, you can't do it.
I have people all the time, but especially on the Mississippi Gardening Facebook page, which is one of the safest pages. We don't let any, well, there's a lot of weirdos on there, but there's no there's no crazy. Well, there's some crazy people on there, but it's not any pervert. Well, there's some perverted people on there. Anyway, it's just it's amateur gardening site, and we don't get into too much stuff. But people say, well, my pawpaw always had cherries on his cherry tree. Well, show them to him. Well, it's been gone 30 years. Nobody showed me a cherry in Mississippi. They've been sold here since the 1840s. There was a garden center in Natchez that sold cherries in the 1840s. They've never made cherries here. They like to have a long, cold winter like Michigan, or maybe up in the mountains, maybe up in Tennessee, maybe in Iuka. But in general, this is not banana country. It ain't cherry country. So we have to try to grow first what grows best. We have a lot of really good fruits. Matter of fact, in January, late February, I have a home fruit seminar at a garden center in Jackson called Huttos. And I also have a fruit brochure I put together. I actually wrote a book on this, but I have a brochure that I send to anybody who wants a copy of the best types of fruit from Mississippi and the best varieties of each type. Just send me an email. I send it right back. It's just called Fruits in Mississippi. So anyway, anybody have any questions here? Anybody in the audience? Yes, ma'am. Go for it, Charles.
So last spring, we had all that cold, and my figs kind of died back a little bit. And when I was trimming, I saw those toothpick-looking things sticking out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And MSU says that means cut it down and burn it. What about the root?
Well, first of all, and I appreciate MSU say, but I'm retired MSU Extension, so I'm MSU too, and I say just cut it down and burn it. that's what they said. No. We have a lot of trees, including not just figs, but there's a little insect that gets in. It's a boring insect. Goes in and it sends out this little trail of sawdust. It looks like a toothpick sticking out of it. And when they get in, there's no control for that. Once they get in. But what I did was I just cut mine to the ground. They sprouted back out stronger than ever, and they're taller than me now.
Okay.
You bet. And you can grow figs. I've seen figs growing up against a wall in Scotland. You know, they'll take cold weather. Well, they won't take sudden cold like we get sometimes. And so the main thing is, you got an old tree that needs to be pruned, an old shrub, cut it below the damage. And a lot of times that has what's called a rejuvenating effect. And I wish I could do that to my attitude, just cut it off and start it over again. But you can take plants and start them completely over again by cutting them back. It's perfectly okay. So, yes, ma'am.
Tell us about your affinity for your friends in England, what attracts you to the area, the world across the pond, and how they embrace your Southern culture.
Well, I do. Well, first of all, the part of England that I'm in is Northern England, which is very much like the south of the United States. I live in basically the Delta of England. You know, a matter of fact, they have a real strong textile industry there, and they did most of their textiles were made from cotton from the Mississippi Delta. So when I'm over there, they always say, "You're from Mississippi? Have you ever been to the Delta?" And I'm thinking, I flunked out of Mississippi Delta Junior College. You don't get more Delta than that. But in general, they love our music. I live fairly close to Liverpool. You know, the Rolling Stones, all, you know, the Mississippi. And its culture, its music, its some of the foods are really, really popular in the north of England. I'm not talking about what we call Southerners down there. You know, they're like people from New England. And folks from England, you know, I know what I'm talking about here. But Northerners are more laid back, and that's where I live. But anyway, we like music. We like food. We like folk music. They got good beer, you know. And have you been here in the summertime in Mississippi? I'm out of here. I'm going where it gets up to 85 and cools down at 63 at night. So anyway, it's a good part of the world. The gardens are good. And the reason the gardens are good is not because they're better gardeners, but because they have a steady climate. It never gets really, really cold, never gets really hot, never gets really dry. And they garden literally year round. You go to every botanic garden in England, and they have an area set aside specifically to be at its peak in January or February, specifically because they garden year round. So we can do that here too. So basically they got a head start on us, and they only grow stuff that grows well in England. We try to grow stuff here that's from Florida or California or other places. So they know where they are. Yes, sir.
We on the end of the show, man.
Oh man, what you talking about?
I know.
I'm just starting to feel nice again.
Well, we got Next Stop Mississippi coming up next.
Oh, that's right. Well, it's going to be. And when Jermaine and them get here, you better strap it down, because they're going to rock and roll. I'm horticulturist Felder Rush, and we've been talking about garden. I've been stumbling around here because all of a sudden I got to be somebody in front of people instead of just me and Java having a good time. But I do appreciate all the folks at MPB making this possible to take it on the road. And thank y'all so much for supporting MPB, and hope to see y'all next time.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand. We'll be right back.